This is RSBNB Update, episode 583, recorded Friday, September 2nd, 2016. Spontaneous combustion. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. Just Sirion and myself here this week.
Hi there.
So this week is a very laid-back week on RS, I want to say, compared to some of the other weeks that we've had. So we're just going to be here. We're going to talk about the updates of the week and bring you guys up to speed on what's been going on and share some interesting information with you guys from the stats stream. Normally I don't watch these developer streams, but this one was actually pretty good. And it shows, I think, because of the production value associated with it. You could definitely tell that this was well produced beforehand, compared to some of the other ones. So we got that. Some interesting things in the tweaks and fixes as well. A little bit of a few tidbits here and there. And, just get going then with the Cather B and White Wolf Mountain graphical rework. So obviously Cather B has been as it is for a long time. I don't think Cather B has really changed much aside from, you know, NXT and RuneScape HD when that came out. That is adding the textures to it. So it's been the same basically structurally since RS2 came out, and it's just had minor texture updates along the way since then. And, you know, everyone knew the place as it was, like the back of their own hand, with farming patch and all the other various fishing tools out there. And, I mean, White Wolf Mountain associated with various quests and whatnot. So now... do you feel that the old Cather B was adequate on its own, or were we in need of a rework?
I think many areas, like all the areas in RuneScape that haven't been touched up, are falling behind. If you look at new areas, there's a huge contrast. And if you look at the beginner's area these days, Ashdale, then you arrive in Taverly, you might go to Burthorpe, you might go to Falador. Those are all pretty cool looking areas. But then you cross White Wolf Mountain and it's you come in a really, really old area. I mean, Sears Village, Camelot, Ardoin, and Cather B itself were just, they stood in a big contrast with, say, Taverly. So I think was in need of a touch-up. I think there's more areas that need a touch-up, but Cather B is a pretty important one. It's very central in the world, and I think it needed some work.
Yeah. I mean, typically when they do graphical reworks, I love what they have been, you know, coming out with relating to the recent ones. You know, Falador, Port Sarum, Void Knight Outpost all look great in NXT. You know, the only thing that kind of bothers me and irks me a little bit about these graphical reworks is when they end up structurally changing the layout of these places and adding buildings or amenities that weren't really there before. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't feel as though that should be happening without like a major event in game necessitating it, which was the case here with Cather B.
So Cather B has changed quite a lot. The layout is completely different. They have added some new content to it. But if you look at how Cather B was before the graphical rework, it was used for the farming patches, it was used for the fishing, and it was used for the three pineapple, well, almost three pineapples and seaweed. And it didn't really feel like a town on its own. If you look at, say, Drainer Village, which I would consider similarly sized to Caffaby, there's a more wide variety of reasons why you would go there. And they have added the stalls now, the thieving stalls. And I don't know if that's the only thing they really added, but all in all, it feels like a more varied village now that is more diverse and has more content on its own. So I think that the changes they did do made Caffaby a more interesting and actual village, and actually a place that you would visit if you're a low level or medium level player.
You're right. It does definitely look more village-like, you know, village at the side of a mountain with a few little things here that you might do. And, you know, it's not necessarily...
Because it used to be a bunch of empty houses.
Right. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, another thing that really jumps out with this here is that the color palette compared to what was before in the original Caffaby is just, you know, it's absolutely astounding what NXT can do. If you're not using NXT, you definitely should go there and have a look and see what they brought in with this. And I mean, I guess the thieving stalls kind of do make sense because you come from, let's just say Taverly, and you come over the mountain and you see these thieving stalls, and where's the next place you go if you're passing through Caffaby? It's got to be Ardoin, right? If you're going, if you're going south. So with that, I mean, it kind of a foreshadowing thing that, oh, there's going to be some thieving in Caffaby, but there's going to be more in Ardoin.
And a little marketplace they created there adds some life to the village. It was so, it felt dead. Like there were almost no NPCs. There were just some empty houses, really.
Yeah.
And they, together with this new content, and also by adding this new color palette, this new style, they gave Caffaby its own. I can't find the word.
Own identity.
Yeah, there you go. It gave Caffaby an identity, and that it didn't have that before.
Yeah. You know, another thing that I'm happy about with this is it almost actually looks more efficient now to teleport to the farming patch using the Camelot teleport than to use the Caffaby lodestone, believe it or not. That's just something that my initial observations noticed coming in for the farming runs and whatnot. So there's that observation as well. Also the fisherman's house, you know, it, I think his house is missing a window. He's got this huge house that's on the water. He's got windows on the left and right looking out to the farming patch and the dock, but he has nothing looking out to the wider ocean. So, that's a bit of a nitpick. White Wolf Mountain actually looks like a mountain now, which I think is great. And you and I were talking about this pre-show. You feel the path to take with White Wolf Mountain is a little bit less obvious now than it was previously.
Yeah, so I was looking around, like, where do I go? I found a cave that ended up being the Dwarven Cave. So that's from the fishing contest quest, if I remember correctly. That one is really non-obvious, because there's no house there anymore. So that's a bit hard to find. And then, like, actually finding the way up the mountain, it felt really weird to me. And maybe that's just because I'm not used to it, but that doesn't really seem to be a path up there. So I'm not entirely sure how that's going to work out in the end. Maybe it's just something I have to get used to, but I was a bit struggling finding the right way. And you always also... On the other side, like the Taverly side, the exit of the mountain is actually closer to Burthorpe than Taverly, so that has slightly changed as well.
There's also an exit of the mountain at Taverly too, but right by the Taverly bank.
Yeah. So I think it is the same as it used to be. I think there used to be an entrance there, but you would have to walk south first and then like take a turn. So now you can more quickly access before from the White Wolf Mountain.
You know, another kind of odd thing is that if you go up on White Wolf Mountain, you go there's basically, rather than, you know, staying completely on the mountain, you need to click through two caves to get there. And when you're actually on the top of the mountain, the sky turns blue for some reason, almost like a night blue. I don't know why that's the case, if that's a bug, but it doesn't really make sense to have that happening.
I didn't notice it on my quick run too, so.
All right. Well, maybe that was an issue then with when this was first coming out, because I know there was a couple of banding things as well with trying to get the textures to load through first, right? So maybe I didn't have all the assets loaded properly, and that was causing some kind of issue for that. But yeah, it's a really simple walk here. If anyone's watching the video version of the podcast, I'm playing a sample of that through right now. Basically, you run up from the Catherby fruit patch, and then you just follow that path, click a cave, then make a little zigzag around the mountain, and then go through another cave, and then lo and behold, you will end up on the other side of the mountain, ready to come down straight into Burthorpe, or Taverley, actually. So that's why I say I found this a lot simpler. But actually, looking at the map right now, Sirion, I do see what you said, the exit to Burthorpe, that is actually right there, apparent on the world map. So I didn't go that way, but you can exit into either Taverley or Burthorpe now, which I think is good. And of course, the grapple hook is still there too, if you just prefer to do that.
I do wonder though, so the actual area on top of the mountain did not feel very long. So
no,
I'm curious to see how dangerous it is to go over the mountain, because that was a thing when you were a really low level player. You first get your membership and you're like, oh, I want to visit Caverby. You have to get over that mountain, and that's quite scary because there's wolves there. And I think you can more easily just run through right now, because the area on top of the mountain where the actual high level wolves are is really, really short. So
yeah. Let me just do a quick count here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 wolves on the top of the mountain where the gnome glider is.
And a huge area of that is like a dead end.
Yep.
I think you only run to like a small part of it.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
I don't know. That I'm a bit sad about that. It was a fun thing as a low-level player to think back of, like, oh, I was so scared of going over White Wolf Mountain, and now not so much anymore.
Yeah,
so.
Another great thing is you can see the mountain camp and all the other things to the north now, which is really great. So maybe I think the mountain's height might be exaggerated a bit, but nonetheless, it's all there. So all in all, pretty happy with this graphical rework. I don't know if there's much else to say about it, because, I mean, there's no real content associated with Catherby itself. So
the only thing that I disliked is the new ground textures.
I mean, they also look to have changed the ground textures in Taverley a bit too. And I mean, like, they don't look bad, but I guess what we're seeing is that they do look maybe a little bit muddy.
So if you walk to Camelot, at some point you'll see the textures flip over. And I stood there for a half a minute or so looking at the two textures, and I wasn't sure which I liked better. The new style of ground textures, yeah, they look a bit muddy. That's not my prime concern. Like, the green looks a bit weird, just slightly unnatural, but not cartoony enough to really fit within the RuneScape style. That might need a slight tweak to really work out well, but I'm nitpicking now. I think they did an amazing job in general with the graphical rework.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Really like what they did, and I think they took a great area as well. I mean, we're going to go to the stats a bit later on the show, but there are still new players coming in, and I think this is a great way of making sure that the starting area is more consistent in graphics quality, and I really hope they will continue this trend towards Sears Village and then all the way down to Adoin, and that would be great.
Well, there's an entire area up on top of the mountain that I never got to. In the screenshots here, there's one way up top with the ice giant. So I guess that's why it felt simpler for me, is because I never went all the way up there. But you can see that on the screenshot of the news posting. So
did they... I forgot to check this, but did they actually update the ice caves as well? Because I know they didn't...
I didn't check that either. Oops.
I don't think they updated the Dwarven Tunnel. So they probably didn't update the ice cave sighting.
Anyways, should we move on to the Crablet Plunder?
Oh, dear. Yeah. Let's do that.
So Crablet Plunder is the monthly free stuff event in RS. In August, we had the extra treasure hunter key. This month, we have Crablet Plunder. To do this, you talk to Classy the Crablet near the Berthorpe Lodestone, or you can access it from the social menu in your ribbon. And basically what you do is each day you will have a certain set of skills or a certain Crablet that you can choose, and then based on that you'll get a certain amount of experience, and each consecutive day that you log in, that experience will be increased. So, for example, you can optimize it to be in a certain skill, or you can, just go for the ultimate Crablet at the end. So, what do you think of this?
So we had a bit of a preview last week, and during this week, I've tried to make up my mind, and so I have been looking back, and I found that we have more of these special things going on in the game all the time. So August had the beach, July had Port Sarim, I think.
Yep.
Then
yep. To get ready
May
for the arc.
May was Mega May. I don't remember that far back. I looked some things up, but it appears that we continuously get these community things going on. Like, there must be something happening in the game. It feels like Jack is saying we need to have stuff happening all the time. And at this point, I look at this and I'm like, can't we have just a normal month for RuneScape? Because I don't get to play much RuneScape. I also don't want to feel like I'm missing out. So right now at the beach, for example, I spend at least 20 minutes, half an hour doing the beach every day, which takes away from my gaming time to do other activities. And I tried figuring out why Jagex is doing this, and I have the feeling that Jagex thinks it needs these events to keep high-level players, players that, for example, have the completionist cape, they need to provide some sort of temporal content to keep them logged in every day. And this feels just like one of those fillers. Don't get me wrong, I think the concept of like choosing your own thing is really interesting, and I'm happy to talk about it for a bit, but not before saying that why do we need this other filler? It's what does it really add to the game?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't even need to go anywhere to claim this one. All you do is you click your community tab and go to seasonal event. Then you got Crablet Plunder. And then, I mean, you just see the login chain and then there you go. You're done. I mean, it just feels relatively... It's a low commitment thing compared to the beach, compared to Mega May, compared to the Port Sarum rework, but it still is enticing people to log in every day. Now, I don't know exactly, like, I think it was easy to point the finger in August and say that, you know, the extra treasure hunter key is to try and get us to buy more keys on Treasure Hunter. I'm not sure exactly what this is trying to do except for getting us to log in every day.
Yeah. I mean, I have brought this up many times since I was on the show. It seemed to have happened while I started being co-host on the show. But time after time, Jagex comes out with these things that make you log in every single day. And after two or three things, I would still say, all right, this can be a coincidence. Maybe they're just trying things out. But this seems to be a consistent thing Jagex is doing these days. I just want to go back to playing my game normally, and I can already see the next thing coming for October, and I'm not looking forward to it. And this is just, I understand it's a 1 minute thing that you do when you log in, but now I feel one more reason I have to log in every day. I don't like that feeling.
Yeah. I'm not sure on this, but, basically, the way it works is that there's different types of crablets: Rusty, Scarlet, and Azure boost your XP by 10, 20, and 30%. The rarer types of Silver and Gold give 40 and 50%, while the Chromatic will give you a 60% XP boost and are the most valuable. If you're lucky, you'll be able to catch multiple types at the same time and give yourself a truly amazing boost. So, for example, a Chromatic plus a Gold, that's 60 and 50% boost. And let's say you were able to boost this with a certain skill, or maybe even a skill bundle, which is the ultimate form of these, because the XP is not split between them. It's actually a certain amount of XP for each skill bundle. So, for example, the Quartermaster bundle includes fishing, farming, and cooking. Well, the support bundle includes construction, agility, and herb lore. Now, imagine a support bundle, construction, agility, and herb lore being boosted with, say, a Scarlet for 20% boost and Silver for 40% boost on the amount of XP that you get. And you're going to be getting these boosts all throughout the entire month. So it has the potential here to have a huge amount of experience coming into the game with this. So, and, you know, unlike other things that have been talked about on these promotions, it's not something that you can enhance right now, at least not yet, with Treasure Hunter. So, I guess it's good from that perspective that everyone who plays can take part in this.
Yeah, I mean, it is, in a way, it's very fair. People that can log in every day, whether they want to throw money at it or not, can get everything out of it. That's good. That's new. But people who are busy and for reasons only able to play on the weekends would be very disadvantaged by this.
Yeah.
And without a very, very good reason, I feel.
Yeah, and I mean, just to play a bit of devil's advocate here, I think that one definite positive thing that can come from this is that, I mean, if someone is going to log in and they're already on the fence about doing that, I don't know if providing all this XP would be enough to entice someone to log in, because I don't think they're doing an email campaign about Crablet Plunder. I haven't seen it promoted extensively on social as well. So I could just throw out there that, you know, aside from maybe trying to get people to log in, this is just a way to stir up a bit of community engagement, because everyone knows an engaging community is better than one that doesn't engage. So if you are giving people things that, you know, maybe subliminally have them remember that you're there, that the community watchmen are there, so to speak, Jagex in this form, are, you know, looking after you guys and whatnot, that definitely can go a long ways to creating a positive perspective of the community managers themselves. So that's another way of looking at it that I think we could say is positive without trying to get people to log in. That's my alternate take on it.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I think they took an interesting direction with this particular event. There's some random chance, but there's also the ability you get to choose. It's a bit like Yahtzee, you throw the dice, you get to pick your dice you want to keep. I think that's an interesting concept. it feels a bit gimmicky, maybe a bit like minigame thing or loot thing, but hey, kudos for them for implementing it. I just don't think it was necessary to add an event to the game at this particular time.
All right. Well, that's Crablet Plunder. Also this month, we are seeing the Crystal Peacock armor arriving if you purchase with a game card. So,
yeah.
What do you think of this based on what we see here in the news posting? You think that would be enough to encourage you or anyone you know to purchase with the game card?
Well, no.
No. All right. Yeah, same here. And I mean, it's just a cosmetic override. So unless you're, you know, really, really set on how this is going to look, or if you need a membership top up, it's going to be a hard ass to go out and pick this up. Unless, of course, you are a part of Premier Club. In that case, well, you're going to ultimately get that at the end of the day.
So. Yeah. I just have to laugh every time because Jagex is really enthusiastic about this whole Crystal Peacock thing. If you look at the BTS, they're like, ooh, and this month's favorite is my Crystal Peacock armor. And I'm like, dude, it's a piece of armor, which is a cosmetic override. And don't get me wrong, it looks pretty cool, but it's not the best looking armor in the game. They're getting so enthusiastic, energetic about this thing. But in the end, it's a piece of armor you get when you get the game cards. And, I mean, maybe Jerix really wants to get the game cards to be popular. I think they're inconvenient because you have to get out of the house for them. I mean, I get why they would appeal to younger audiences that maybe don't have their own bank account yet, or maybe don't have a credit card yet. I can see why it appeals to them. They can go out with their pocket money, buy a game card, get RuneScape credit. But I don't think you get people out of the house by using Crystal Peak or Garmin.
No.
So the enthusiasm that they show on like the videos seems a bit out of place, and it's quite humorous, so I'll take it.
All right. Well, in that case, moving on to patch notes, then a couple of interesting things this week relating to the Dwarven tools, specifically the chain axe and the fish extractors. They now correctly deplete the rare resource twice as fast if double resources mode is enabled, and they also correctly deplete the rare resource when double it. XP mode is enabled. So if double XP or double resource mode was not enabled, they weren't depleting at the right rate. I don't know if they were depleting at all.
So it looked, when I read this, I think they had them switched around.
Yeah.
Before.
Okay.
That's what I think, but I don't know how it behaved.
Yeah,
before.
I don't really use these, so I can't offer a first-hand opinion on this, but interesting nonetheless. I guess people might have got a little bit of a boost here from this. Enriched Cursed Springs will now grant the correct XP when harvesting from them. So this is, of course, relating to the Wilderness Divination course. Wilderness Sword will also now be recharged when the day rolls over without needing to log out. That's pretty good. Always those logouts that you would need to reset by, or recharges that you need to reset by logging out were always annoying. There we go. Now, this is something that you and I have talked about before, and it's been an issue for lots of people on all platforms. New audio in a session should now play correctly. It's been well known that there have been audio issues with getting sounds to play at the right time and getting sounds to play, period, with the NXT client. So there have supposedly been some fixes pushed to this week, so we'll just have to wait and see to
these usually was the issue
we were having.
Yeah, so these usually happen during combat because there's a lot of sounds that play when you use all the abilities. And at some point, they just ended up being backed up and nothing would play at all, or sometimes like a random sound. You haven't been able to do combat since the update, so I haven't checked if it's fixed, but I will try to do some over the weekend, and we can report back next week, maybe.
Yeah, thinking back, I haven't heard any sounds disappear, because I know even, you know, just doing mundane things in Priftinus would have caused the sound to disappear in the past. So
yeah. I mean, if it's fixed, it's good. It's sort of long overdue, but we never know how technically complex some issues are.
Exactly. Like, you see one thing and you could say, oh, that's a simple thing to fix, but in reality it's not. It never is. It is now possible to obtain Ramsay the cooking pet by fermenting wines.
You skipped two of them.
Oops. Whoops-a-doozy. Oh, shoot. All right, well, we'll do the other skilling pet one first, and I'll do the one that you're excited about after that. Also related to skilling pets, they can now be obtained at the Clan Citadel when performing actions there. So that's good. Allow people not to feel a burden to cap.
Hmm.
Yeah. And now the one that you're most excited about. What's that?
Well, they fixed various random NXT crashes.
Have you had any crashes this week, Sirion?
Not this week in particular. I haven't played a lot, to be honest. I have been very busy. But no, so far not yet. They turned out to be quite random when showing up. Sometimes you would have multiple days. Sometimes you would have a day fine. So I need a bit more data to make sure that it's actually fixed. But hopefully next time, if I decide to ever do Warbands again, I won't crash when running back to hand in my supplies. That was quite annoying. So I'm really happy about it. And this shows that they are really doing all they can to just make NXT more stable, because we still need a lot of people to switch to them. That actually reminds me, they didn't include any NXT adoption rates in the stats screen, didn't they?
Yeah, they did actually.
Huh. It's not on the list, though, is it?
They did. It's 52%.
Ooh, actually. That's good.
Yeah,
that's...
or something like that. I'll check it out. I forgot to put that one in the notes. But one final patch note before we move on to the analytics, which you can tell Sirion's jumping at the bit for. Players with the 15-year anniversary emote can now perform the 2011 variant. So, what happened in RS in 2011?
2011. That sounds like a big year. Isn't that when the wilderness and free trading got back? Or was it earlier?
It was, but I don't think that was mentioned here in this emote. So, basically, what we got is Ritual of the Majorat in 2011.
Ah, yes.
So it starts off this emote. You see Lucien and one of the other Majorat coming by. You also see, I'm not sure what it is, it looked like a dragonkin. Someone gets totally destroyed, and all that's left are his feet and legs. So I'm not sure what that's representing, but. Yeah, only one I recognize there is Lucien. So, I honestly like these things, and it's kind of like, you know, those Christmas Advent calendars. You open a new one each and every year, or each and every day in December, and you get something that you're not expecting. So each month, I look forward to the new emote.
Oh, really? I usually get chocolates.
Well, I mean, for the Christmas ones, yeah, but I had the remote this year, so. Yeah. 2011 was probably great. 2011, okay. Ritual of the Majorat, Clan Citadel's next, of course, next.
Mm.
Yeah, that's the one. Oh, see, I'm not a PVM person. That's why I didn't recognize next here, but.
Next is not that difficult to recognize. She has been in several quests.
Anyways, watch that. It's on your 15-year anniversary emote. Anything else in the patch notes that you'd like to highlight?
I know.
All right. Well, in that case, then, we'll be moving on to the analytics and stats data stream that was released this past Tuesday, and is one that I did watch. And we'll start off with the one that you were first mentioning, and I actually neglected to put it in the notes here, but probably since it's the most pertinent, I can say that 59% of the RS player base is using NXT.
That's good. I think Jax will try to push that up to 100% as soon as possible, because we need to kill Java.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing they said in the stream about that is that the reason that it's this low is because they know that people who play RS don't necessarily have the best computer in the world. So as a result, it is something that they are aware of, and as inertia, it will get there eventually. All right. Next up, account creation by year and total level. I found this one really interesting, this infographic here. So, obviously, you can learn a lot from this one. I assume you have the image up here, yes?
Yep.
So, the biggest chunk of people who are playing the game currently are those who started in 2005, trailing to 2008, and those people have, on average, between 1,200 and 2,400 total level, and the most max players come from, unsurprisingly, 2005, 2006, and 2007. So, you can definitely see where the core of the RS community lies from, and how the perceived dip in activity from 2010 onwards up to last year was really apparent. You can see, you know, in 2014 and 2015, the players who started then, that their accounts are now mid-level. And 2013 was a pretty quiet year, as was 12 and as was 11. But in 2015, it has really, or sorry, 2016 rather, it has really shot up once again, and you're seeing a whole bunch of people with new levels, lower levels, and all the way in the level range to 1200 and to 1800. So it'll be interesting to see next year what happens with these players if that hump stays there.
Worth mentioning is, of course, the addition of Iron Man mode.
Yes.
That is that has spawned a lot of new account creations. So that is going to change these statistics. I'm also not entirely sure if this is all players or all players active in the last month.
I believe this is everything they did for stats was all players active in the last month.
Yeah, so what this might also tell them from the dip between 2010 and 2014... is that you either have players from the old core or players that stop playing after 2 years. So, I mean, you would need more data to actually make good conclusions based on this, but these are all possibilities based on what we see before us.
Yeah, and I mean, you can also see that the low to mid-level characters, 600 to 1200, are also a fairly significant chunk. So while it might seem as though that most of the updates that come out are geared towards the high-level players and the people who have been in game the longest, there are still people in this game who are leveling up, who are mid-level, and who need that guidance. And for me, this was really eye-opening to see this chart here, because that tells me that we, you know, should not necessarily forget about these people, and perhaps we need to do some outreach on expanding out beyond the base of, you know, the veteran players, because I feel that's like most of what our listeners are and what we cater to. But if you are a new player out there, let me know, let us know, and we'll, I mean, I'd be interested to hear that. Because these numbers tell a story about the RS community, so I'm wondering if our community is the same. So we'll have to examine that further.
Yeah, so this ties in really, really well with this week's update, of course, because they updated Cavabi, and Cavabi will not be used by a lot of high-level players. But because there is this new population coming into the game, because there is this mid-level population that will be using Cavibi for like shark fishing, or is it shark fishing, swordfish? I don't even know. And they will really benefit from this update. So while you think might think I almost never come in Cavibi, there is this group of player that does. The stats show it. So I love how this update and this stream coincide in this week and show us that these decisions to graphical rework an area like Cavibi are grounded.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, in some ways that makes me happy. I just wish, you know, more updates could be geared towards data rather than the community, namely mining and smithing rework. But we'll leave that at that. There's some other interesting pictures that came from this stream, and that is also the average stat levels of the current RS players. Average 185 quest points, 1773 total, combat level 105. Average divination level, lowest right now is level 55. Next is farming at level 56, hunter at 59, and those are the ones in the 60s, or 50s rather. Then you have ones in the 60s, including 61 runecrafting, 61 summoning, 61 construction, 65 dungeoneering, and 68 slayer. And this also might surprise you guys, considering how easy it is to trade thieving these days, but the average member thieving level is only level 61.
I mean, they said this average player, right?
Yeah, the average player over the last month.
So if this includes free players, then member skills are going to be lower.
True. On the other hand, 75 woodcutting, 76 magic, 71 prayer, 70 fishing, 72 cooking, right around that, you know, 1 million XP marker seems to be pretty standard.
Yeah.
So,
and the highest one seems to be constitution at 18.
That's interesting.
Sense. Well, it makes sense because you see the combat skills are quite high. Range is quite low at 73, but like 76 for magic and 77 for all of the melee ones. So that's going to boost up your constitution as well.
Mm. All right. Next up, breakdown of player data from where the players log in. Unsurprisingly, 56% are from North America, 31% Europe, 7% Australasia, so Australia, New Zealand, and the Pacific Islands, 2% Asia, 3% South America, and 1% Africa. Of course, the biggest is the US, the UK, Canada, Australia, and Brazil.
And the Netherlands.
Oh, yeah, right. That is a pretty dark blue right there.
I happen to know that for some reason the Netherlands has quite a big population within RuneScape. It's not uncommon to see some Dutch chat going around.
There's also something really apparent on this map, if you've noticed. Do you know what it is?
No. The very wide China, maybe?
There you go. Yeah. So obviously that's what we were talking about with the Chinese acquisition and the fact that the game doesn't exist currently in China. And that is a huge, huge market. So with Asia being 2% and China being completely white, it's safe to see why Jagex wants to expand into Asia.
So just to go on a slight and quick tangent, do you think that we will be seeing some hints towards Chinese localization in the game in the next few months and possibly Jagex catering to the Asian market? Because to be honest, China is a billion people. India is not a billion people. That is a huge audience there. And if you can reach that, you can double the game population easily.
Yeah, you definitely would need some localization for that. And I mean, the acquisition really only went through this past summer. So, I mean, I think the earliest we'd see something like that would probably be next year sometime, a localization into Chinese. But, I mean, you would basically need a huge department to translate that because, I mean, it's a complicated language.
They are acquired by a Chinese company now, so there could definitely be some pressure from above to go in that direction. But we will have to wait and see.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also interesting looking at this map, pointing out why Brazilian Portuguese has his own language. So, all right. So other stats coming from this broadcast this week include some interesting data on maxed players. There are only 9,000 players maxed in the game. It certainly feels like more, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I see you don't, you haven't included the percentages of completionist case.
I forgot to put those in, but I think you have those numbers.
If I can quickly find the document.
But anyways, with the maxed players, it also took a minimum of 47 days to max playtime, average 409 days, max 2252 days. So, a huge range right there. But, I mean, you hear everyone saying, oh, I'm going to max. And there's only 9,000 of these people who have done that, which is a small percentage of the people currently logged in. So, once again, I'm left to think, are we as a veteran-based community, both in RSBNB and, to a lesser extent, Clan Quest, I want to say, surrounding ourselves with people who are maxed?
So I don't think so. I have seen some sort of a trend, at least within Clan Quest, that people who haven't finished our quests come in and actually start doing the quests again. So we as veteran players are quite high level. We tend to play with people who might have started the game around the same time or are about the same level, because you meet them in game in areas that make sense for you. So I think it is good that there is this separation, and I think you will always have a bit of a different view how you see the game. But there's definitely a huge audience still untouched. And you also have to consider the fact that players that only just started the game, like relatively, like mid-level players, might not be as involved with the community yet and don't go out and look for clans or websites like RSBNB to listen to podcasts, because they're not involved with the game as much as the players who have spent hours upon hours on getting their character trained and up.
All right, that's a fair point.
So I do have the data here, actually, about completionists and stuff. So the percentage of players that has a completionist cape, and that this is of all active players in the last month, is only 1.81%.
Which is pretty small.
And only about 1 in 10 of those, so that's 0.18%, has trimmed. Or is it 1 in... No, that's 1 in 10.
Yeah, 1 in 10.
Yeah.
And the Master Quest Cape?
The Master Quest Cape is only 0.27%.
Which is tiny, 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 tiny.
So, I mean, that might have to do with the fact it's not that old yet. Like, completion has been in the game for years. The Master Quest Cape, only a few months. So, that these percentages are going to shift around a bit over the next year or so. But we always say all these high-level content updates we need are important, but these updates only cater to a very small percentage of the game.
Yeah, definitely. So,
and this is why things like the mining and smithing rework are a million times more important than adding...
Yep.
Well, more end-game content.
Yep, that's right.
The game needs to be fixed over the entire spectrum of low level to high level. This is why invention could have been a normal skill. We need the content to cater to an entire spectrum of players, and these statistics show that.
Yeah, I'm not going to beat the same drum here. I mean, we've been through this a lot recently with the ARC and the SOS Scaling Podcast, all of which you can find at update.rsmb.com. But, you know, it just feels as though there is a lack of vision for, you know, maybe they got the vision for the next year planned out, but where are we going in the next 5 years? Yeah. That kind of thing. Yeah. Where do we want to take the skills? Do we want, you know, this to be a time where we're adding lots of endgame content, where we translate RuneScape to a game where you grind and you are aiming for endgame to do things? Or do we want to enhance that experience beforehand and enhance all the content that inevitably leads to our current endgame? So that's something that Jagex really needs to get out there. And the mining and smithing rework is an important pillar of that. So,
I mean, I think a big part of this lies in the bias that people who are involved with the game, so higher level, are more present and more vocal on social media,
yes.
forums, communities, yes. clans, everywhere. So if Jagex releases an update, if you're a fairly new player to the game, you don't really care about the update yet. You're still discovering all the existing game content. You won't hear much from them on the forums. You will hear the end-level players with nothing else to do than playing the new content. Those will be giving the feedback, and you will have skewed feedback. And that is what is sort of pushing the content. So these statistics are really important and show that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some other numbers here. Average playtime of the standard players, 4,300 hours. 81% of the player base is currently using NIS, that is the new interface system launched in 2013 with RS3. 19% at Legacy, so that's gone down quite a bit, which is great. 69% are using Revolution, 19% manual, and 12% Legacy combat. So it's safe to say that the combat is progressing into the general direction that people are starting to use Revolution and full manual mode and embrace the evolution of combat for what it actually is 4 years later. So that is excellent, having only 12% of the community on some version of Legacy combat. So I'm really happy about that. Going into some more pet info here, boss pets. I know that's probably something lots of people are really concerned about, but of course the most unlocked boss pet as of August 17th was the Mega Duck with 19.9k of them in game. General Gorodar next at 12.7k, and then Creel Tutsaroth, the Zamorak pet, at 11.2k, and then Kriara at 8.8. Then it just goes down from there. And of course the least unlocked is the Telos pet, and that's because it's the newest with that 483. Virago 591. Let's see, the Legions are also in the lower third. Calphite Queen is only at 1700 or so. The raid bosses are at about 1000, give or take. And right in the middle, Nex 3.8k, Araxi 3.7k. Yeah, so interesting to see this breakdown. It kind of makes sense. It's sort of based on ease of use, and also the Twin Furies are in the middle of the pack. Those will presumably go up over time because they're relatively easy, but once again, new content, only a few months old. Grigorvik also really low as well. So these will all go up over time.
Interesting to see how Zoyana is a lot lower than the other Gorgoroth Dungeon 1 bosses.
Yeah, even lower than the Corp. And the
even lower
QBD,
than Corp.
KBD.
Yeah.
Well, you know, going back, she was never really fought all that often, right?
No.
So that makes sense. All right, now an update onto something more recent, and that's the skilling pets. Currently still Bubbles, the fishing pet, is in first place with around 2466, followed by Divination, Woodcutting, Farming at 769, Thieving 560, and then unsurprisingly way, way at the bottom, Construction. Only 12 pets have been put into game. So, very rare on Construction. Fletching 22, Crafting 28, Herblore 70.
You see the buyables are pretty low. Like, construction is a buyable, fletching is a buyable, crafting is a buyable, herblore is a buyable, smithing is a buyable, cooking is basically a buyable, and those are the six bottom ones.
Yep. Yep. Agility, Dojo Mojo, 293, right in the middle. Same with Slayer. Runecrafting as well. So, very interesting. I was also told to put in an update here that Thieves has gone 28 million thieving XP without a thieving pet at 200 mil XP. So, lots of people struggling for those pets. It is really unfortunate to see all these people struggling, but I guess that's just the nature of the randomness in the game and after the hotfixes that have been put into place here. So, any other comments on the skilling pets before we move on?
Nope.
Alrighty.
Oh, this is what you're going to nerd out about, aren't you?
What?
This is what you're going to nerd out about, aren't you?
Oh, yes, the economy stats. The economy in RS, you know, has always been something that people have asked questions about and wanted more data on, and they actually did provide a really, really telling graph this week about inflation going back all the way to 2013. So basically what this chart is that they released is you have an index, and this index is based on a basket of goods that they're calling the consumer price index, which is something that is used also in real life. The real life CPI measures things like groceries and other expendables that an average household would pay on a per monthly basis, and tracks the price of those to measure inflation. So accordingly with RS, RS also has the same kind of CPI right here. And they also have with this a set of indices that show how each of these certain markets is behaving. And with that, starting off at 100% in 2013 and going down, seeing a period of deflation, it has inevitably leveled off. And, you know, there have been periods of severe inflation and deflation with the RS economy, and in general, you want it to remain stable. And right now, I'd say it's looking at around, you know, 65% of value worth of what things were worth in 2013. So, and it's been relatively stable, which is what you want. And you can also see on this graph here some of the things that are the most traded. So, what do you believe is the most traded item in game? Or item category.
Oh, I have to graph in front of me.
So. Oh, well, that's cheating. It's discontinued items, followed by main hand weaponry and smithing supplies.
Isn't this weighted by their actual value?
Yes.
So discontinued items might not be the most traded item, but because they're so expensive,
they have the most impact.
Yes.
And, you know, with that main hand, also, I guess that this is why they wanted to be careful with the mining and smithing rework, is because we've had such a period of stability with the economy specifically relating to mining and smithing that they didn't want to, you know, necessarily throw a huge wrench into the equation here. So, and, you know, this is the economy at the whole, and this is not meant to, you know, measure how a certain item is doing and whether or not, you know, a certain item is going to crash or something like that. This is just meant to track the entire RS economy and make sure it's healthy. But with the main hand weapons and the smithing supplies being relatively significant on this chart, I can see why maybe they decided to hold this back, you know, given the player's reaction. Because if these things were to crash, you could probably also see that the general CPI crash as well. So, I don't know if I just did this, but did I just justify pulling back the mining and smithing rework, Sirion?
Maybe.
I was hoping I wouldn't do that. Anyways, if you're looking at this graph, you can see also the weekly changes, and you can see a huge jump in commodity prices after the launch of Invention, Telos, and of course, double XP weekends as well. So, very telling to look at this.
Yeah. Something I'm sadly missing from this graph is the rune value improvements. They came out in September 2014. And if you look in the runes row, there's like a slightly brighter thing going on there, but it doesn't seem to have had a big impact on the economy.
Right. And what you can do for this to see where exactly things are happening, you can switch to the other graph they provided of deltas, where it's represented by changes in red and blue. So if you see lots of red on the graph, that means that things are going down. Or if you see blue, they're going up. So if we're looking at runes, this is going to kind of hard to follow since I don't have an exact cursor. But when did you say? September 2014?
September 2014.
Yeah, it's not even registering a blip here at all. So.
Yeah, it's showing some here, but it's
relatively minor. I mean, yeah, and it's hard to tell exactly.
There seems to be a red blob actually in the September month, so.
Oh, yeah, it's right there, actually. You can definitely see it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that is a minor impact, but it just shows how the economy works. Really great.
Fun fact, by the way, this graph is red and blue because of colorblindness.
Yes, and that's something that they mentioned in the stream and sounds like something that JX should be paying more attention to in-game.
Yeah.
Now, they also had some interesting heat maps in the video. I'm only going to show you guys one of them. But here's a surface world heat map for the same day that the wilderness update launched. So basically what you can do, it goes from midnight to midnight, and you'll see all the players all around the RS landmass and where they're clustered. You can see warbands come online, then there's going to be a little bit of a blip where it goes dark when the wilderness shuts down and the entire world shuts down for the update, and then boom, the entire world is going to flow to the wilderness. But you can also see hotspots in Priftinus, a little bit on the southern lands. Desert is pretty vacated as well. So always neat to see. And, you know, part of me wishes that they had something like this that was always up on, like, screen on their website or something. You know how you can go to certain websites and you can see where all the Google searches are coming in and stuff like that all around the world? I think that'd be interesting to have.
Well, it would be sort of cheating because you can't figure out where people are in the wilderness and PK them, but...
Well, I mean, they could put it on an hour time delay.
Yeah, that might work. And you don't know what world people are in as well, so...
Yeah, there's no reason to do that, but... really neat. The divination colonies are also hot spots as well. So,
yeah, especially the poison waste one.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just mesmerized by things like this. I don't know about you or the listeners.
I thought the heat maps were really interested. It will be interesting to see how they work out on other updates as well.
Yeah.
Wish we got one every week.
Yeah, that would be great. Jagex, if you're listening, that would be excellent. And maybe I'll post that in this week's confidential feedback. So, and, you know, this is per minute. So it looks like this is everyone on all the worlds meshed together. So, whoever said RuneScape was a dead game, eh?
Let's just make one single world.
I don't think that would be a good idea based on this.
I think certain people would have even more issues with running.
Oh?
NXT.
Oh, right. All right, that makes sense. Next up, some very interesting information on Quest, which is, of course, what you and I base our playing around for the most part. So let's just have a look at these. First up, Quest playtime and number released per year. So obviously the number of quests launched were at their highest in 2002 with 32, and it's gone down steadily since then, with 2005 being a close second at 29. 2012 saw 15 quests released, and I mean, you can definitely feel what we've all been saying, how there's only 7 quests this year, 7 quests last year, 6 in 2013. So it's kind of unfortunate, but I think it shows a maturity of the game. What do you think?
I mean, so the interesting line here is the green line, which is the total playtime of all the quests that have come out.
So, right.
The quests we do get are a lot bigger and a lot longer. So in terms of minutes of time you spend questing, that hasn't been much difference. I mean, it goes up and down a bit. But yeah, generally there was not a lot of that. There's not a lot of change in that aspect. However, I personally do think short little quests can be really, really fun and really interesting. And that is why I was really excited about the Bottle Quest ID, which hasn't really matured this year, I feel. So I would like there to be a bit more of a balance again. Say, like, if you look at 2008, it was 17 quests. That is a lot. I would be happy with one quest a month, say. So 2010, mm-hmm. Great year.
Also of note, 105 minutes average playtime per quest in 2016.
Or 2015, yeah, that makes sense. Rather. That makes sense. We had some really big months. We had the Lord of Imperium quest.
That was a good one.
We had some Sliska quests as well, I think. Now I have to think back. It's quite difficult.
But on comparison, the average playtime in 2002 was only 14 minutes.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, Cook's assistant, right?
Yeah, that's right. 61 minutes 2011, and it's just been going up and up and up ever since. We dipped down to 34 in 2012, but you can see that the epic quests released into game have just really had a major impact. So, but 2005 most playtime minutes for all quests. All right, some final data here. Relating to Priftinus, only 50% of players in-game have the requirements to complete Plague's End.
It's surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It certainly feels like more. But when this started out in 2014, right when the quest launched, it was around 20%.
Yeah.
And it's just gone up and up ever since. A few dips here and there. It's really funny because you can see when people are banned here because things go down, believe it or not.
Yeah. It's also, I'm trying to understand why the dips happened during the double XP weekend.
That's a very good observation. Huh. What does that mean? What can that mean?
I do not know.
Huh.
Oh, it might be people logging in to the game just for the bonus XP weekend.
Okay.
That is the only thing I can think of. Because this probably looks at like the people active in a certain
time window. Yes, you're right. All right. That makes sense. And the requirement is classed as players at level 75 plus in all the 10 required skills and completing the three requisite quests for Plague's End: Catapult Construction, Making History, and Within the Light. So it started going up, of course, after the Priftinus quest or Plague's End came out, and then really went up after the city launched. And our final piece of data relates to God factions. No surprise here. Most represented God faction in RS by the players, Zaros, 22.5%. Following that, we have Armadale at 15.9% and Zamorak at 15.6%. Godless, 12%. Saradomin at 11.49%. Saren at 11.79%. Interesting, to say the least here, about this. V, 2.65%. Sliske, 4.6%. Bandos, 3.6%. So all these things are disappearing.
Yeah, I mean, so from what I streamed, they expected more Sliske supporters because of the attention he gets these days. But apparently, people don't like him that much. Why would that be?
Yeah, I think they designed him to be kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
But, also, some Quest-related requirements. Thank you for pointing this out, Sirion. 17.6K players have completed all the quests in the game. You think that's a large number, or...
It's moderate? More people than have maxed, so I'm happy.
That's true. It's double.
Like,
almost
double. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, the highest completed quest by actual completion is Cabin Fever, and by volume is Cook's Assistant. And they made a joke in the stream that, oh, it's Cabin Fever because you're just on a boat and that's all you got to do in that quest. So they got to make more quests where you're just on a boat and in one location if they want people to complete it. Mm. Unsurprisingly, also, least completed quest is Recipe for Disaster because it's so large and so many parts to it. 56 hours of questing content in-game, and the average player has 105 quest points. So with that means that the lore aspects of RS itself, if you throw all the quests into that basket, have more than, you know, any of these huge blockbuster games out there, and you can get most of it for free.
And the 56 hours, that's without the whole skill training part.
Yeah, exactly.
I assume, at least. So that it's a lot of content just to get to the quest cape. With not too much grinding, I think.
That makes me feel great about the place of quests in this game, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyways, I'm happy to leave this at that and move on to some other RS things if you're good.
Yes, I'm good. I'm really hoping that Jagex will do this another time.
Yeah, I think every 6 months would probably be a nice interval.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyways, next up we have a community video here done by Parnassius in which he spent 10 hours at the Aberrant Spectres and clocked the drop logs from those, the amount of herbs that he got. Now let's just say he got a huge amount of snapegrass and a really notable amount of herbs in each of these categories. So it looks like it's got to be 789 dwarf weed, 613 lantatimi, 190 snapdragon, 87 torstal maybe, or maybe that's 67 lantatimi. I can't tell from the images here, but nonetheless, after 10 hours, including the GP drops, 9.2 million worth of herbs and GP from these critters. And this is considering that they're a low-level slayer creature, relatively AFKable, and all you need to do is know your items. So here, I think, is one of the problems we identified with skills in game, is that you put these primaries into the world like this, and that controls the prices, and... I don't know. It just doesn't seem right for the RS economy to have this many herbs coming into game.
There could be a huge boost to farming by reducing this. And this is not just herbs. It's everything. So it's good to check these things and bring them up.
613 grimy marantil, 789 grimy guam, 87 dwarf weed, 85 cadentine, these are all grimy, 390 terralman, 355 herolander, 156 evanto, let's see, 190 irrit, 239 ranner, 67 lantatimes, and that's it for herbs, lots of rude maces, swamp tar, coins. So yeah, I guess if you're ever wanting to camp somewhere, Aberrant Spectres are a pretty good place to go. But yeah, hopefully something like this will be addressed in a major skilling rebalance at some point in the future.
So. 2017 survey. We're counting on you.
Please, please, people. I hope you voted for equalizing skilling in combat and fixing skilling, because obviously we need it. We need it badly. We need it. I don't know who I'm calling out to. I feel like I'm calling out to some guardian angel that may or may not exist. But anyways, you can find that on his YouTube channel, which I believe is Parnassius RS. So failing that, link is in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Wunderbar. That's this week's treasure hunter promotion. As we know, Wunderbar means wonderful in German. Interesting, they got a bit of a German.
Well, it's Wunderbar.
Well, close enough. I don't speak German, so I don't need to do the accent. But
I didn't do the accent, but I said the actual German word.
I thought I heard you say Wunderbar.
Yeah, Wunderbar. Okay. That's the actual word.
Yeah.
It's a U, not an O.
Yes. But basically with this, every chest you open, you will start to fill the Wunderbar meter. And once you have reached the prize category that you want, activate the Wunderbar, and your next category or your next prize will be from that category or rarer. So it could be, you know, even all the way up. Yeah. I think if I was the kind of person who would buy spins or keys, rather, this would be the weekend I'd do it, maybe. Because
maybe
if you get to red or purple, you can probably fill that quickly, and that'd be the best way of ensuring you get what you want. So
yeah, I mean, you can get some pretty good stuff. Because last week we had the Clairvoyance one. I got some purple and red, and just have it guaranteed to be that rarity, you get some really, really good prices. So
yeah, and I was reminded after the fact that if you have, you know, like a bajillion hearts of ice, you can freeze up, you know, the two lowest categories, so you're always going to get an orange or better. So you could have done that. I didn't know. All right, moving on from that. Interestingly enough, Idle Adventures is now currently in early access, so if you want to give this a go and you didn't get into the beta, you can do that by popping onto Steam. And of course, that's the RS clicker that we talked about back in July with Tyler. So obviously they feel it's progressed enough and that the gameplay is developed enough that they can bring it out to a wider audience. So, you going to give it a go?
I might boot it up again to see what changed, but I lost all my interest after 2 days or so. I mean, the idle games. I liked the original Cookie Clicker. That was a fun concept, had good humor. But that was a browser thing you could keep open the entire day. This is like a game that it takes a while to boot up. And I don't know. I don't feel a sense of achievement when playing it, so I chucked it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's certainly interesting. And if it's successful, it proves that Chronicle and Idle Adventures are two things related to the RuneScape IP that can be successful. And that's where Jagex has to go in the future, is focusing on the RSIP. So that's got to be the lesson from this. And the fact it's on Steam, you know how huge Steam is, the Steam store. So many people use that as their gaming platform. Yeah. It's bound to reach people who might not have heard of it before. So it's,
yeah. I mean, I have seen people who repeatedly play Clicker Heroes, and I don't get why they play it, but they play it. So there is an audience for this, for these kind of games. Maybe these audiences are not even in the Western world. Who knows? So this might open up a new area for Jagex. And, well, we all wish them to be successful, I think.
Yeah, because a success for Jagex is a success for all of us, even those of us who just wish to play standard RS.
I agree.
All right, and of course today is September 2nd, so that means it's time for the monthly behind the scenes, and that is the September updates that are going to be brought to us. So what do you think of September? Obviously, we won't go into detail about each of these because we'll wait to discuss them when they come out, but at the top level rundown, we have augmentable pickaxes, the Bounty Hunter and Crucible Deathmatch reworked we talked about a couple weeks back, the Dagonoth rework, and the Tales of Nomad mini quest, and some new invention perks. So which of these is jumping out to you?
So this update this month is not really, it doesn't really attach to me. It's it's very combat focused with PvP and a Dagonov rework, and a Tales of Nomad might be interesting, but Nomad is a bit of a boss fight, so we'll have to see. But what I'm really excited about is the currency pouch improvements. So they released this currency pouch, and they were like, we are going to fix all those things you have in your bank all the time by putting them in a currency pouch. And then they didn't. Like, when the art came out, why were my chimes in my inventory? I want to put them in a currency pouch. And they're going to do that. They're going to add all the things that I have. I have a tab in my bank for currencies. This is going to clean up that part that I almost never look at. So it's a bit of a ninja-sized thing, but I'm really excited about it. So,
yeah. For me personally, this month, it's the augmentable pickaxes and the new invention perks that are going to be most exciting for me. Granted, I wish that the augmentable pickaxes did come with the mining and smithing rework, but I'll take the pickaxes anyways. The invention perks are going to be four new perks, which include flanking, which offers an increased damage when you are to the side or rear of your opponent, and a couple of perks that offer huge benefit at the cost of two perk slots. So I'm looking forward to that. And the only other question I have for this month is the Tales of Nomad. If it's a boss that you're fighting, I mean, how is this going to work if you killed Nomad?
Yeah, so this might be a flashback or whatever. Who knows? They're also going to add the hard mode for the actual Nomad's Allergy boss with a Soul Cape as reward. I'm not sure if people are going to play that. I have never heard of somebody who replayed the boss fight of the Hero's Welcome quest, which also had the repeatable boss fight. So, feels a bit like wasted effort, but who knows?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously this boss fight is going to be probably a master quest point cape requirement, I'd imagine. And you're right, it would have to be a flashback because it's the entire Nomad's Elegy boss. So,
Are you excited about the Treasure Hunter promotion called Beyond the Ark?
You know, I didn't look at that, but I don't know. Do we really need a Treasure Hunter promotion that's going to be focusing on farming, prayer, and fire making?
But yes, of course, we need to build up hype for Ark Part 2.
Oh, they better do that well then, because I think that if this one is hyped up enough, then maybe we'll see some progress from this and there will be a reason to go back to the Ark. But before we get too far down that rabbit hole again, I don't want to repeat that Ark episode. So I think with that point, we're just going to move straight on to questions. What do you think?
I'll allow it.
All right. So with that being said, there's your RS updates for this week, everyone. And our first question this week is an audio question from Marumska. So we'll play that right now.
Hello, Shane and Sirion. How you doing? Marumski. It's been a while, but I'm still around. Now, I've heard your concerns of the new microtransactions to the game, which clearly the new owners have a hand at. They clearly don't know how to utilize the RuneScape property. Because my favorite company, SNK, just released KOF-14. Sidetrack, but bear with me. They have a mobile RPG game in China, and that makes about 40 million US a month. So I was thinking, what aspects of RuneScape would you make it into a mobile game so they can back off the actual true MMO? I don't know, fishing trawler, I don't know, hunting activities. Well, basically any D&D or any activities could be made into a game. What would you think it would be the most suitable? And also, Shane, on starting today, Sunday, my local TV station is going to show all the Star Trek movies. So, which one would you suggest skipping? Or are they all perfect 10 on 10 gold movies? Anyway, I'll talk to you next time, or I'm scared out.
All right, so let's start with the RS side of that question. Anything outright that you think could be moved to a mobile game in RS, Sirion?
Dungeoneering.
All right, how do you think that would go?
So, I mean, you can't really put the actual Dungeoneering skill and put it in a mobile app, but the whole part, the whole exploration part is quite interesting. I think you can extract that and make a mobile game out of that. Dungeon crawlers are not uncommon. They're a known game genre, but the Dungeoneering has these unique parts to it. I can't pinpoint them, but it just really feels like exploring a dungeon, solving the puzzles, and going towards the end. And I'm not entirely sure if it stays compelling if you keep doing it over and over again, if there's not really a level up system. So that is something they would have to figure out for the mobile app. But the mechanics, I think, provide a huge basis for an interesting game.
All right. For me, I'd like to see not necessarily a complete mobile game, but a more so of a front end for player-owned ports. You know, on mobile, because, I mean, ports is something at the very beginning you check, you know, 3 or 4 times a day, nominally, right? When you're first starting out. And that goes down to inevitably 2 times a day and then probably 1 time a day later on. But I think it would be great if you could check that from your mobile phone. Failing that, I wouldn't mind seeing the rework of mobilizing armies put on mobile in kind of a MOBA kind of sense. If you could do that on mobile, I think you could with the size of smartphones and how all that works. Because let's face it, mobilizing armies really doesn't get much attention in the actual game. So you might as well put it somewhere where games like that, strategy games, have been successful, right? So I think mobilizing armies would be a good add.
And it already has mobile in the name.
Ah, there you go. There you go. And, you know, if we want to kind of go on the whole Pokemon Go kind of bandwagon and something similar, so wait, we're not going to be catching, you know, critters around RS. Every time you're moving around various areas of the real world, let's just say that you would come across a divination wisp and you'd be all harvested, and maybe that could give you some kind of small divination booster in game.
Well, that's actually quite interesting.
Yeah.
I was too early to judge.
Yeah. And I mean, I could throw the obvious out there, like Farmville as well, but I don't want to necessarily create a Farmville clone, so I'll just leave that out.
We have to be careful with the augmented reality app, though. We don't want people having, like, killing random strangers in the road for combat experience, or stealing groceries from the store for thieving experience. That it sounds like a bad idea, so
it really does.
So this might also make you realize what a bad person you are within RuneScape. Actually, you steal, you kill random people. Yeah,
totally agree. Yeah.
Another thing that I like, this is not a mini game, which I find really interesting. Conquest. It's a bit like chess.
It's Wizard's
but
chess,
different. And I quite like the game. I haven't played it in a while, but I think it's enjoyable. And it could be put in a mobile game because you can make progression. You can make people unlock new skills, new pieces, new boards, new rules. So Conquest is a bit of a thing people don't know a lot about. But I think it's a really interesting concept as well. So,
yeah, and I mean, with that, you could ultimately say that you could put the entire Berthorpe game room on them.
Yeah.
So, all right. So that's a good idea for RS Mobile expansion. Goes kind of what we were talking about with Idle Adventures being successful, and maybe Jagex could branch out. Failing that, Star Trek movies. What Star Trek movies should you skip? You know, I think that for the most part, they're all pretty good. The first one, that is the first one I ever released in 1979, just called Star Trek the Motion Picture, was kind of obtuse and hard to get into because it was so abstract in a way compared to other action movies of the day. And failing that, the only other one that really, I mean, is painful to watch sometimes is Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. But, you know, that's a relatively minor niggle there. But I think 2, 3, 4, and 6 are all excellent. First Contact definitely is the best Next Generation crew movie. Nemesis is kind of iffy. That's the last Next Generation crew movie. That was the 10th one. Insurrection, Star Trek 9, was basically a Next Generation episode in movie form, which I like. Some people don't. And with regards to
Generations.
Generations, what do you think of that?
Oh, yeah, I watched it recently. Yeah, it was interesting. It adds in a couple of new elements from, like, the old Star Trek, some good humor. But it is very much a TNG episode as well, I think. In a way,
yeah. You know, there's some debate about things that happen in Generations, and I won't say what they are in case anyone out there doesn't want spoilers. But I mean, there's some thought that events in that movie could have been saved for the last Next Generation movie and whatnot. But a final note on this, I'll say, is that if you're watching the new reboot movies of 2009 and later, I would highly recommend that you skip the second one, Into Darkness. That one was pretty downright bad.
Painful.
Yeah, it was. It was. All right, and with that being said, Star Trek Beyond is great. That is probably my favorite of the new reboot movies. Have you seen that yet?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's really good. Anyways, thank you, Maromska, for that question. And I'll let you, Sirion, read this last question.
It's from Quest Kitty, one of our favorite clan questers. In what position do you find the most comfortable to sleep in?
Well, that's interesting. I know for me personally, when I go to bed, I don't end up in the same position. So... I normally start on my side or my back and then end up at the end on my back, but it's not in like just flat on the back. It's sometimes in a contorted form or something to that effect. So, I'd say probably side or back for me.
Yeah. Same to me. It's really interesting. Like in the night, I always roll back to my back. Even if I sleep in on my belly, which is funny because that has caused me to fall out of my bed sometimes.
Yeah, I never lie flat on my stomach. That's not never something
that,
I can do.
It's quite funny. I got a bigger bed since I moved into this apartment, and I still managed to fall out of it. I have no idea how I did that, but apparently. Sometimes I like to sleep next to my bed.
Yeah, so. I've done that in the past too, and I've actually gone sleepwalking in the past as well. But we'll save all those experiences for some other questions should anyone out there ultimately want to ask about that. But yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, you are in one position, then you're in a different position, and sometimes you're somewhere else completely different. And that's kind of what I'm getting at here, and you're obviously on the floor, right?
yeah.
So,
I mean, everybody's different. I know my sister always ends up like 90 degrees rotated in the morning for some reason.
All right. Yeah, I've had that happen before too. Yep. All right. Well, if you want to send us in questions, you can do that in any number of ways. First and foremost, update.rsmeme.com/ask on our forums, or call us or leave us a text message at our number, which is 571-57BNB. or translated to 571-572-2632. We also have the email address, questions@rsbnb.com. And if you are on Twitter and you prefer that, you can leave us a direct message at RSBNB. All right, so on to tech news we go. I'm already starting to struggle holding in my laughter here because... Oh my gosh. Has this ever happened? All right.
Is this my fault?
Why would it be your fault? No. I'm not laughing because of what you said. I'm laughing because of who this is and how massive this is going to be and that nothing like this has ever happened before. The Samsung Galaxy Note 7, the flagship smartphone from Samsung that was released this past month in August, has been recalled worldwide.
You're quite sadistic to enjoy this much, you know that, right?
due to exploding batteries. And it's not because I wish harm on anyone. It's just because for so long, Samsung produces these smartphones that look like they're plastic chew toys for infants, that they look like they're so cheap and everything like that. But then eventually they put together a phone, a flagship phone that looks good, has a good feature set, and is solid, and then it spontaneously combusts.
It is quite funny. It's like I'm reading the comments on the article that's linked, and I'm really enjoying myself. I mean, just reading one. I'll keep using mine. We'll probably bury it in the garden overnight just to be safe. To which Dan responds: If you bury it near a fault, you create a disastrous earthquake like in the movie San Andreas.
All right.
It's like Russian roulette, but with phablets.
Yeah. Well, all joking aside, this relates to the battery cells used in the Note 7s. Basically, what happens is the battery cells are defective, and that causes the phones to catch fire and possibly explode. This is due to using low-quality battery cells, which overheat when charged and used heavily. So this is affecting every Samsung Galaxy Note 7 worldwide. There is some...
Except for the ones in China.
But there was some, you know, question about whether or not they would go for a full worldwide recall, because something like that doesn't really happen all that often. So they did that, and that was confirmed late yesterday. And, I mean, if you are planning a huge campaign on TV, for example, I know Samsung always has ads over here, you just wasted a lot of money, and you're spending a lot of money replacing these phones, so this is definitely going to hurt Samsung. But there is also a list of things that you can do if you do happen to own one of these Note 7s in all these countries, and how you can... replace them. So that is what Samsung is offering for this. And I mean, I guess that the replacement phones are already going to be available. So who knows if the next ones will be. But yeah, I don't know. I perhaps found that a little too funny. And with this being said, I would like to point everyone out there that Apple is unveiling a new device next week that probably will not explode. So all you guys who hopped to Samsung in Galaxy Note 7 is on the rumor that, oh, we're going to remove the headphone jack on the iPhone 7. Well, let's just wait and see about that. And I know you and I were talking about this yesterday, that there are people who purchase phones based on pure rumors and whatnot and leave platforms. And it doesn't really make sense to do that, I don't think, because you never know what's going to happen, right?
No. I mean, there have been many examples of rumors that came out and turned out to be not true. So you're making a random risk decision by basing your decision on rumors. So, I don't know. Let's just wait and see what Apple has to say about the new phone and base our decisions on that.
Exactly. And that's why I think that, especially given this news, it probably might have been a better thing to wait.
Yeah, I mean, Apple stock actually has gone up since this issue. So, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I was trying to look for Samsung stock prices, but I can't find it anywhere. All the charts are gone for some reason. So,
what's their stock symbol?
Oh, there you go. SMSN.
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 It's not popping up in Google for some reason when I popped it in.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, that's taking a dip. Not that big, though, but it's taking a big dip.
All right. Well, all joking aside, if you do have a Note 7, definitely get it replaced, because I don't want any of my friends who have jumped to this device recently to have their pants catch on fire, or worse.
So don't bury it in your garden.
Yeah, definitely don't do
that. That was not good advice.
Yeah, definitely do that. Move back to your iPhones. I think that would be the best thing to do at this stage. All right, our next piece of tech news relates to Apple and their huge amount of cash stock that they have offshore from the United States. The European Union specifically, the jurisdiction of Ireland, I believe it is, wants Apple to pay $14.5 billion in tax, because apparently for profits since 2003 to 2014, they paid 1% to almost 0% of tax on its European profits that they made. So, and I mean, this is definitely something Apple should be doing, I think, because if you're operating in a jurisdiction, you should pay the taxes there that you legally have to pay. But at the same time, it is entirely normal for a corporation to not want to pay as much taxes as they want to, because corporation's sole purpose ought to be to generate a profit for the shareholders, which Apple is notoriously good at. So I think with that, it kind of underlies the issue here that Apple needs to start storing more of its cash in the U.S. So, and I mean, there's lots of things that they could do to do that, and it would greatly help the U.S. economy if they did, but there's lots of other extenuating factors that force them to not do that, including corporate tax rates, one of which in the U.S. is the highest in the G7. So it's safe to see why they don't want to do that. But, you know, you hear about tax evasion all the time, and you rarely expect it to be a company like Apple that's involved in this. And quoting Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, basically is calling this decision political crap, saying that anti-competition authorities in Brussels miscalculated how much tax the company paid in Ireland. So there could be a legal battle ensuing from this as well. So while Samsung has exploding phones, Apple has been said to not be paying the right amount of tax.
So, from what I heard, is that the EU has asked Ireland to collect taxes from Apple.
Right.
But Ireland, like the state of Ireland, is actually now going to law court over this.
Okay.
That's the last I heard. I haven't really following it because like you said, you hear about these tax evasion issues all the time, and I think they, I don't know. I get a bit tired of reading about them. So,
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at it this way, and you look at, you know, what the U.S. Has created in the company Apple, because I think it's safe to say that without, you know, the capitalist free market system in the United States, Apple probably wouldn't exist. I think mm-hmm. everyone can agree with that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that is something that Apple needs to be aware of as well, is that rather than hiding money, they should definitely bring it back to the U.S. because that's hurting the U.S. economy. And first and foremost, I mean, unless they want to, you know, go headquarter themselves in China or something like that, they have a duty to support the country where they're initially based. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this affects Apple shares as well, because, you know, if there's uncertainty with the company's financial viability in a certain region of the world, that can affect that as well, and that can ultimately affect product choices too. So that's how it comes down to the end user optimally. But
and this is quite a big case and might set a precedent for what happens with other tech companies that
exactly.
also have their bases up in Europe, because Apple is by far not the only one having this issue.
Yeah, and I mean, you got to also look at other companies as well, like Facebook with their monetization scheme, Google as well. Pretty much any company that deals in business in all these countries needs to be aware of these tax laws, and the vast majority of them are headquartered in the U.S., so maybe the U.S. needs to be taking a larger role in this and encouraging them to keep their money domestically. All right, and I'd also like to just say that Tim Cook said that he won't bring the money back until there's a fair rate, but said he was optimistic of corporate tax changes next year. So, there we go. And our final piece of tech news relates to YouTube, quote-unquote, censoring vloggers. I think it goes without saying that in this day and age in the world, that everyone who says they are being censored needs to have, you know, needs to be looked at through a certain lens, because what is censorship in some cases is not necessarily censorship, but then there are cases of censorship that are passed off as, you know, enforcing various rules that are actually done for a malicious reason in censoring someone. So basically what's happening with YouTube is that popular YouTubers are having their certain videos removed from the monetization scheme for inappropriate content. So while they say it's, you know, not censorship, it is censorship, because if you have no advertising, you have no livelihood. And these are for YouTubers who get tens of thousands of views on their videos. And some of the things that are quote-unquote being censored cover anything from LGBT history to skincare videos. There's other ones like vegetables that look like certain bodily parts. And thoughts from a refugee camp as well. So, I mean, it's safe to see why one of these videos is being censored, but thoughts from a refugee camp, skincare videos, and LGBT history, I don't know why those would have their monetization turned off. And, you know, it's always been a case that with YouTube content policies that they can say that a video is not acceptable for monetization. That is, you know, it might contain copyrighted material or something that is not within the community guidelines. But with this, it appears as though it's actually being enforced more so now than it was in the past. So
I mean, we are seeing a takeover of YouTube for normal television, right? And television over the last few decades has played a huge role in bringing the world's information and the world's events to the living room. It shows you what's going on in these refugee camps, and it has made a huge influence in how the world works. Like, the TV is one of the biggest drives of political change over the last few decades, I would say.
Yes.
And isn't that just taking over that role? And it is important, I think, to have certain sources of information, and most of the categories you just named, I think, are important, that there are videos about it. And people need to make those videos, and people need to live and make a livelihood somehow. And I can see why you want to get those videos, those income, the money you need to actually get around from those videos, if you make those videos as your livelihood. If you are a journalist, you also earn money by reporting on these things. So it should be a viable option, I think. And I can understand why people say you are making money out of showing somebody's misery in a refugee camp.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
It's the world as it stands right now, you know?
But I think, don't just say you can't make money on this. No. Work together with the content creators to work out a scheme that is both respectful to the actual people being filmed and the person that creates the content. And together, I think something can be figured out. And maybe this is where YouTube Red comes in. Maybe this is why we need to have people start paying for, say, news content. And then we can get rid of the whole advertisement part of it, which makes things better.
But if you do that, then, I mean, or are you saying YouTube Red from a content producer's point of view, so that a content producer will get money regardless from YouTube Red about whether or not that video has appropriate advertisements on it?
I'm just saying that people would then watch the videos based on a more subscription model, and you can get rid of the whole advertising thing.
Right, but what if people can't afford the YouTube Red, and, you know, a video that is important about this is, you know, on YouTube Red? Like, how does that work then?
That is an issue, and I mean, I'm not saying I'm an expert on this, so I'm just shouting things as possible entry points to solution. But I think there needs to be a dialogue between YouTube and content creators to find the best possible solution. Now, this whole thing, as far as I'm aware, blew up because people started getting notified about the changes, about these monetizations being turned off. And if I read it correctly, YouTube has actually put out a statement that nothing actually changed in the guidelines.
Yep, they
did. It's just the communication that has changed. So this is just one of those examples where the internet starts looking at it, putting the most worst case scenarios on it. And what I think we as a internet community, or maybe even an internet society, should do is look where is this going to go and keep this dialogue of how can we make this work out the best for everybody involved. Keep that dialogue going, because it's a process that needs to be fleshed out over time. YouTube is the biggest platform, but it's a whole new thing. And we had to figure this out these things for television as well. So we have to understand the position that everybody here is in. This is brand new stuff. This is a huge development in how our society works. So yes, let's be skeptical, but also, let's be careful and let's try to work together to make this better.
Yeah, I think you summarized that quite well. And the only thing I want to add is that, you know, if there's a piece of monetized content out there and it does have its advertising removed, as long as YouTube is clear about that to the owner about what's going on, then I think that fits within your dialogue. But then if one of these notifications does arrive and it's not for, you know, a good reason, and it is looking like it is censorship, then we can get worried. So we'll just have to wait and see about how this pans out in the next couple of months.
Agreed.
Alrighty, well, with that being said, on to the Skill of the Month update for August and September. So in our August Skill of the Month, Flash took victory in mining with 22.8 million XP gained.
Consistency.
Yeah, it's very linear,
It's a linear graph, basically. It's really impressive.
Yeah. Second place was Tim with 13.1, and third place was Mandy Girl with 7.4 million experience gained in this skill of the month. And then flipping over to the September skill of the month for... which is magic. We only have
one. Enjoying this?
Yeah, I am. Super Clank, 1.6 million XP gained in the first day. Second place, Metal Maniac Dime with 2.2K. Flash. Third with 1.6K XP gained.
I like how Panacius is joining the club with 11 experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's only one day in, and there's a double XP weekend, so there could be some huge jumps along the way here. So, anyways, that's always good for a chuckle. But otherwise, this month I also have an Informer Roundup where you can head on over to informer.rsbnb.com, and you can see what everyone's been up to for the past month. That includes articles like Colton's A History Through the Third Age, Majorat Lore Series, Summary of Skilling Pets by Tanis, Alex's Running Wild in the Wilderness, talking about task sets in the wilderness, and then Mr. Bistro comes in with some bonus experience tips for the coming bonus XP weekend in September. And finally, my piece on Windows 10 and how we've been enjoying the operating system for 1 year. So, looking great this month. All that and more at informer.rsmb.com. So we have a couple of achievements of the week this week. Always nice to see here. So you want to tell us what they are?
Sure. The names, this, I'm going to mispronounce these probably, so bear with me. Clutch Shiv, got 99 magic on August 28, 2016. And Super C Clank got 99 agility at August 26, 2016. Congratulations to both, and my apologies if I butchered your name too much.
Yeah, and good job. Always nice to see 99 magic and agilities cropping up there. So, good job. And if you want to be included in Achievements of the Week, all you need to do is sign up at rsbnb.com/forums, fill in your RS name, and your XP will start being tracked in, I believe, 7 days, if I recall. So, yeah. Or no, there's actually no requirement on that. You just got to log in once every 60 days now, I believe. So. All right, so pick of the week time. Do you have a pick of the week for us, Sirion?
Sure, I'll have a pick of the week for you, and it's an absolute classic, actually. So, if you are from the olden days where computer games were still quite new, you might have played the game by Chris Sarek called Transport Tycoon or Transport Tycoon Deluxe. It's a transport management game, and it was quite popular, and it still held up quite well even throughout the days. But as computers get newer and games get older, you stop being able to play them. So there's actually has been a community that has made a complete open source implementation of the game, and it's called OpenTTD or Open Transport Tycoon Deluxe. And since a couple of years, they even have like a completely open source graphics and audio set, so you can play it without even owning the base game. And every now and then I pick it up, start playing, and look at the clock in what feels like 5 minutes later, but it turns out to be like 5 hours later. So if you're into it, just give it a try. It looks a bit old-fashioned, but the gameplay is so solid. It's really interesting to see one of the old games still holding up these days. It's still being actively updated. It has multiplayer mode, if that's your thing. It's a lot of fun. It's completely free to play as well, so give that a spin.
All right, and where can we find this?
So it probably works if you go to openttd.org. There will be a link in the video description as well.
Right. Yeah, I found that. openttd.org. Okay, so it's kind of almost, I guess you could say that it's kind of like one of those clicker things, right?
Well, no, not at all. It's more like a, well, Railroad Tycoon, Roller Coaster Tycoon, like that genre. It's you are in charge of moving people and goods around, and that's it. You have to earn money through that.
Okay. Yeah,
so it's a hardcore management game, but I find it quite easy to get into.
I think I played Roller Coaster Tycoon in the past, and you know it's not it's definitely a good game. So it's nice to see that something like this has moved its way forward and is still popular today. So
yeah, it's also a lot of fun to play with friends and just start doing fun things that annoy each other.
All right. Well, that sounds good. What you been up to this week?
Not particularly much, I think. So mostly been doing some training. I'm still going for max. It's mostly invention and combat now. So closing in on that, combat is not my favorite activity, so it's a bit of a grind, but it's fun. But yeah, I spent a lot of my free time on dealing with some clan things. The month has just rolled over to September, so that also always introduces a few monthly obligations to take care of. So that has taken away from my game time quite a bit.
Yeah, and I mean, that's understandable, and I'm just a little bit distracted here because my Windows computer decided to wake itself up. But yeah, anyone who wants to join in and all that, that's we're Clan Quest, and you can find us by just searching for us on the Specialist Clans forum, or you know, you can even find our website at clanquest.org and join us in our clan chat, which is Clan Quest, if you want to come and hang out with us if you like questing and you want to hang out with some like-minded people. We're really great, I think. Don't you think?
I think it's a great clan. I mean, it started out as people who really, really like quests, but we have a great community. We have a huge variety of people. And I mean, we have a huge variety of people all over the world. We have people from Asia, America, Europe. We have young people, we have old people, and it's really a community. People care about each other. It's a family, and that's what I love about it. It has a soft spot in my heart. I spend way too much time managing it these days, but I just can't get myself to not do it.
Yeah, and I mean, would it be fair to say that, you know, we would even take someone if they, you know, merely tolerated questing but just wanted a good place to hang out?
I have heard the term "I don't like quests" in our clan chat from a member.
Okay, well, there you go. So even if you feel like you're one of those people, come hang out with us anyways. All right. As for me this week, I have some good news to share for everyone out there who might have been listening to last week's podcast. This week, I was able to successfully get my Super War Master Potion, which, according to the calculations, is the best one that I can do currently for Herb Lore to ensure that I am spending the least amount possible to get XP, because that's 2,000 XP per potion, and that one is actually sellable on the exchange. So with that, I can progress forward and get larger amounts of Herb Lore XP without spending as much money as I was on Super Prayer Renewal Potion, so that's really great. Interesting story behind that. Rather than actually getting the consistent Yak card from the Garageo, I got a Whimsical Bunyip, which plays a random card as well. So I first got the randomness of getting the Bunyip card. Then I got the randomness of the consistent Yak card upon entering the dungeon. And then after that, I actually got the recipe I wanted. So it was actually a pretty nice string of randomness there coming to my side.
Shane, you are just too lucky.
Yeah, some people say that, right? Given the farming pet last week and this. So, I mean, there were only four of them left to unlock, so it was practically a one in four chance, right? But nonetheless, I am kind of lucky with that. Just the fact that I was able to get the consistent Yak after with the Bunyip. So,
well, congratulations. Does it mean we're going to see the Herblore games come in now for real?
Hopefully, yes. Yes, I do have a cash stack of about 80 million that I can use for investing into potions, so it can go really, really quick. So those of you guys in the friends chat, Bits Bytes, and in, of course, the clan chat, be on the lookout. I might be asking you guys to help me in purchasing either vials or potions because they still have the 1,000 potion and vial limit. So I might ask for help some days for that, so just be on the lookout for that. But beyond that, on RS, just a few farming runs here and there, and in my own way, they're getting ready for double XP weekend. But that's about it, I think, for this week. Another long show.
What you get when you give a statistics and data stream to a bunch of nerds like us.
Uh-huh, that's right. That's right. And that's what you also get when your host doesn't have a watch.
Well.
Anyways, anything else before we go?
No, I'll save I'll save the rest for next week.
Alrighty then. Well, this has been Shane and Sirion for RSBME Update. Thank you for sharing your time with us, everyone. And we will see you next week for the first update of September. Bye, everyone.
Bye.